Said Ed is going to be speaking on step 11, which is sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for His knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. So, Ed, we invite you up.
Hi, everybody. My name is Ed, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ed.
I will really try hard not to go over this week.
We have a trap door.
All right. Well, let's see. Step 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Step 11. In the words of Judge Judy, now we're getting somewhere. My mom loved Judge Judy. Anyway, I had a tough time pulling stuff together for this week because, boy, it's just such a deep well there. And I mean, I could talk and we could probably have a regular ongoing meeting about step 11. But there are some things that you might hear today that make you upset or uncomfortable, and that's not my intention. And I'm going to, as we go through this journey together tonight, I think you'll see what I'm talking about. My home group the other night, and talk about getting what you need when you need it. I'm sure, you know, we are reading from the book, The Language of the Heart. And these are Bill W.'s writings in the Grapevine. And we're about two-thirds of the way through the book. And talk about getting what you need when you need it. I'm sure that if we had read another part of this book or something else at another meeting would have jumped out at me, I could have found some relevance to it. But I'll tell you, it just doesn't get any better than this. You know, this was written by Bill in April 1961, and the heading of the letter that he wrote in the Grapevine was God as We Understand Him, The Dilemma of No Faith. And the first paragraph, he starts out the phrase, God as we understand Him, is perhaps the most important expression to be found in our whole AA vocabulary. Within the compass of these five significant words, there can be included every kind and degree of faith, together with a positive assurance that each of us may choose his own. What powerful words those were for me. For those of you that have been here the last few weeks when I've been talking, I've mentioned some of my experience, my upbringing and experience with the faith and religion that I was brought up in. and I had a hard time reconciling that. It just didn't work. I really didn't find a God as I understand Him until I got into this program. And last week when I talked about steps 8, 9, and 10, you know, that's where the promises come in the big book. You know, we will know a new freedom and a new happiness. And I'll tell you what, that new freedom, that let it be okay for me to have a God as I understand Him. Well, what a gift that was. You know, I didn't have to cram this square peg into your round hole, because for all these years it just didn't work. you know, further on in this letter, Bill talks about spiritual cocksureness, pride, and aggression. He says, and he emphasizes, God, as I understood Him, had to be for everybody. Even now, I catch myself chanting that same old barrier-building refrain, do as I do, believe as I do, or else. And you know, that's how I was brought up, you know. When I early on came into the program, old timers said it to me. I've heard it same to other people. They'd say, your eyes are awful close together. And I'd say, what are you talking about? You know, and they're like, well, you say, I know this, and I do this, and I can do that, and I shouldn't, and I. And, well, tonight my eyes are going to be pretty close together because this really is, in this step, it is my experience. So I'm really going to try and focus on me, you know. like I say, this part here where God, as I understood him, had to be for everybody. It's said that, you know, God made us in his own image and likeness. And, boy, there was a woman on our meeting, at our meeting on Tuesday, my home group. And she said, you know, I'm so grateful for hearing this. She says, I know that I've created a God in my image and likeness when my God hates everybody that I hate. And, you know, that really hit home to me, because that's not what I can wrap my head around. You know, there's a spiritual pride that I have to be aware of. It reminds me of, I think it was my wife that first told me about this, five blind men trying to describe an elephant. One's at his tail, and he's got his tail, and he says, boy, it's long and it's really thick and hard and it like a really strong rope, and the other guy says, no, he's at his leg, and he says, it's like a big tree trunk. And the other guy at his tusk says, what are you talking about? It's this long, smooth, hard, curvy, like tooth thing. And the guy in the trunk says, what are you talking about? It's like a snake, and it breathes in and out. And the guy in the ear says, that's all wrong. It's a big floppy leathery thing. And I was one of those guys, you know, take your pick. And it was mine, you know. It was my God as I understood him, and that was it. But, you know, when we get to those promises, and like it says, we will know a new freedom. And the things that I've been learning about lately, I'm so grateful that it's opened my mind somewhat. Years ago, he was a columnist, editorial editor. He wrote for one of the Chicago papers. His name was Sidney J. Harris. And he would write editorials. And occasionally, he would write an article. Instead of an opinion piece, he would write, it was titled, Things I Learned en Route to Looking Up Other Things. And so much of this, what my experience tonight, and like I said, I had a hard time, you know, distilling this into the time that I have here. one thing leads to another for me, and it reminds me of in the back of the big book when it talks about contempt prior to investigation. For me to say that it's got to be my way, and you're wrong, and I just, you know... I'm so grateful that I'm starting to get out of that trap. You know, let me look at my big book here. On page 87, it says, and this is the part in step 11 where they're talking. We usually conclude the period of meditation because they're talking in the morning, looking ahead, asking for guidance, reviewing our actions through the day. And it says, we usually conclude this period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. First of all, I really truly believe that I get everything I need. Not always everything I want, and I don't realize it in the moment, but all I have to do when I'm going through some tough times is to look back. I mean, I've always gotten everything I ever needed. But the thing that jumps out at me with this part here is this sentence that I just read. We conclude period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day. And, you know, that was tough for me. Because I have an easy forgetter. I get busy. So how do I do that? Maintain that conscious contact. Seek through prayer and meditation to improve that, which implies an ongoing way that incorporate that. I remember a fellow I haven't seen in quite a while at a meeting I used to go to in Westfield, New York. He says he talked about living your life as a prayer, and I never knew at the beginning. I didn't know and understand what he meant, and I'm starting to get that now. But you know, all through the day, it's easy to forget, and for me, and I can stray off the path. So I need some reminders, you know. I want to try something different tonight. See if I can do this. When I was a kid, I grew up on the Lower East Side, right across the street from St. Stan's School and Church. And they would, again, when I was young, they would ring the Angelus bells. And what that was it was at 6 a.m., it was at noon, and it was at 6 p.m. And there were a series of bells. And it was a call to all the faithful in the parish. And they would say the in your own personal space, the Angelus prayer. The angel of the Lord appeared unto Mary, and she conceived of the Holy Spirit. And Hail Mary, and this is what those bells sounded like, and I hope this comes through. There were three bells, and then you'd say the prayer. And I remember that as a child. I haven't heard that since just the last couple of weeks when I, you know, started really focusing on what I was doing here. Because again, it led me to this, things I learned in route and looking up other things. My aunt lived a block down the street, and she had a painting of the Angelus. If you've ever seen that, the two old couple farmers in their field that stop, you know, the pitchfork in the ground, and you can tell. Growing up, that didn't mean a whole lot to me. I remember hearing the bells. I remember it was a very peaceful time. You know, the bells would go off, and it was just like, you know, you might hear a bird singing. And they did it three times during the day. A continuing call to prayer. I started getting a little curious about this, you know. The Angelus was a good reminder for me, you know, to help me get back on track. So I started looking a little bit more into this, you know. Who am I to think that my God has to be all our God, you know, and that my way is the right way no matter what? I stumbled across this. It's in the Jewish tradition. It's forgive my pronunciation if anyone knows better, but it's called the Baruch Hu, and it is a call to prayer in the Jewish tradition, which is a call and response prayer.
The prayer leader begins, Baruch Hu et Adonai HaMevorach. The community responds, Baruch Adonai HaMevorach Leolam Va'ed. And the prayer leader concludes, Baruch Adonai HaMevorach Leolam Va'ed. And that's how we begin worship.
Really beautiful call to prayer. Totally unaware of that, you know, because that's what I was exposed to growing up, just that Christian tradition, and and I'm not knocking anything for anybody's belief or disbelief. Again, we have a new freedom today, and I cherish that, and I'll extend it to you right to the end. You know, I would watch these movies, these like war movies. You get to see these TV shows where they've got these special agents overseas, like in Afghanistan or Iraq, so much from this Western perspective. But another one of these reminders, and again, I've been looking into this a little bit more. It's the adhan. It's the Islamic call to prayer. And when I would hear that, before I really knew what it was, it kind of get my hackles up, you know? Because there was so much connotation to all the bad things that these bad people are doing. Five times a day, this is. Goes on. God is the greatest. God is the greatest. No one is worthy of praise except God. there was, I mentioned this Westfield meeting that I used to go to years ago, my home group for a long time. And there was a fellow there, his name was Herb. Herb was an old timer. He passed away, I'm going to say, 7 or 8 years ago. And he was a full-blown agnostic. And but he was very comfortable coming to meetings, very comfortable when these topics would come up. And he would always joke that he went to AABB meetings. And what are AABB meetings? He says, AA in the Bible Belt. And he was joking around, making light of it. But that got me thinking too, you know, how dug in I had been in my own personal beliefs. So with these three examples that I just played for you, how can I believe that Christians or Jews or Muslims or Hindus have a monopoly on God? You know, that's pretty arrogant of me, that spiritual pride that Bill W. talked about in here. You know, Herb, boy, he was a great guy. Really mild-mannered, quiet guy. But, you know, the same letter that Bill W. wrote back in 1961, God as We Understand Him, he talks about meeting a doctor and his wife. And this doctor came right out, you know, and said that he was agnostic, didn't believe in God. And Bill Wilson tried to convert him, I guess, you know, because he was so moved with his own spiritual experience. And the doctor was true to his beliefs. 3 years later, he says, I visited my Midwestern friend. Mary, the doctor's wife, came by for a call and I learned that he had died the week before. Much affected, she began to speak of him. Harvard educated from Boston, he was in a Midwestern town, insisted on just taking care of the people, the small people in his rural community, where he could have went back east to Boston, had a very lucrative practice, made lots of money. and she'd bring it up with him, and he'd say, maybe you're right, but I can't bring myself to leave. I think the people in this place really need me. You know, then she recalled that she never knew that him to complain serious about anything or to criticize anyone bitterly. Though he appeared to be perfectly well, the doctor slowed down in his last 5 years. And it turns out that not until his sudden last illness did she know that all this while he carried a heart condition that could have done it in at any moment. Only him and his own doctor knew that. And she reproached him for that, and he said, "Well, I could see no good cause in causing people to worry about me, especially you, my dear." And Bill Wilson goes on to say, "This was the story of a man of great spiritual worth. The hallmarks were plain to be seen: humor and patience, gentleness and courage, humility and dedication, unselfishness and love. A demonstration I might never come near to making myself. This was the man I had chided and patronized. This was the unbeliever I had presumed to instruct." The doctor had an unwavering belief in his ideals, but he also practiced humility, wisdom, and responsibility. Hence his superb demonstration. George and I were talking on the way here about examples, and it's come up how many times, you know, we just might be the only big book that somebody ever gets to read. So I think this story reminded me of Herb. I'm glad I knew Herb. I'm glad I read this story. I'm glad that I don't have to do certain things in a certain way and be whatever in a certain way. like I mentioned, who am I to think that any faith has a monopoly on God? And again, like Sidney J. Harris, things I learned en route to looking up other things, that Adhan called a prayer in Islam, I looked into that. You know, I had heard, and not too long ago, for the last time that I heard, but I heard it many times over the years. People in AA, and again, I'm not knocking anybody, you know. I've mentioned this in my talks in the last few weeks. My parents, their faith, but when my mother passed away, you know, I finally, and it wasn't just at the, it was shortly before she passed, but I finally understood at a very deep level, you know, what her faith meant to her, what her faith meant to my aunts and uncles, and to that part of my family, and some of my siblings too. And I had the greatest respect for that. I couldn't buy into it, but I have a God today of my understanding. And again, what a gift that is. So, does anyone have a monopoly on this? And I started looking into this. You know, that Adhan that called a prayer, the Muslim called a prayer five times a day. Somebody said, you know, there's a lot of Bible references to the program and to the 12 steps. And there are, you know. And I was curious on this vein, you know, who am I to say that anybody has, that I have a monopoly? So I started looking into this. Are there any references in any other faiths to the 12-step program? And I came across a story about a fellow that was living in Egypt, in Cairo. And he was at a meeting, and you know, those discussion meetings, those awkward moments of silence where nobody's talking. And he says, all of a sudden, it was broken by that call to prayer, booming from the loudspeakers from a mosque not far away. And he says he started to look into it. You know, the if there's any connection with the program of recovery in AA and the Islamic faith. And he says, you know, there are five pillars to Islam that relate to AA references. And he says the first pillar is called Shamada, and it's translated as the word surrender, you know, and that's what we do here. You know, we surrender. We surrender our will and our lives over the care of God as we understood Him. it's a declaration of faith, and that if that doesn't relate to step three, I don't know what does. The second pillar is called Salat, and that's translated as prayer, conscious contact, kind of what I'm talking today in step 11 and again in step three. The third pillar of Islam, Zakat, that is the practice of giving 1/40th of your income to the poor, just like tithing in the Christian faiths. And that's tradition 7 and step 12. The fourth pillar is called Saum, and that's fasting, the Ramadan. And it's physically recalling, if you've ever been literally hungry or wanting for anything, especially spiritually, to physically recall that hunger so that it can generate some empathy with people, and that we can relate and start to relate instead of compare, and be able to help people better. And the fifth pillar of Islam is called the Hajj, which probably a lot of you have heard of, and that's pilgrim to Mecca. They pay homage to the early trials of Abraham, and memorialize the struggle of the religion's founder. The reference to that in our program today is Founders Day in Akron. You know, we give thanks to the messengers who were charged with calling us to God, Dr. Bob and Bill W. And I'm sure that if I looked into Sufism, Jainism, any other faith, that I could find things, because I can't put God in a bottle, but he won't fit. He's everywhere. And again, so you know, the whole point of that is that I'm only one of the people that was describing the elephant, and I'm trying to be open. I think of that part in the big book in the back, you know, that contemporary to investigation. So often, sometimes things do get my hackles up today, you know, and I got to take a breather, and sometimes I push them off, you know, I put them way on the back burner. I'm not ready for that, but I try to be open, you know, that honest, open, and willing, that openness, you know. So that's that part of the 11th tradition for me and my experience today of how do I continue, you know, to do this, to improve my conscious contact with God. All those things are good reminders for me. Praying only for knowledge of His will for us in power to carry that out. So, what to pray for? The step says knowledge of His will for us. You know, on its face, I could say that's pretty simple. I mentioned earlier, a few weeks back, another talk, I heard the Dalai Lama say, someone asked him what our purpose here is on earth, and he says, our purpose is to help other people. And he was going to sit down, and he came back, and he says, and if you can't help them, at least don't hurt them, you know? It can't get much more simple for me, that KISS principle, you know, of what God's will is for me. There's a song by The Doors. Jim Morrison says, you cannot petition the Lord with prayer. So for me to pray for an A on this test, or, boy, that new sports car, or a better job, you know, yeah, I can pray for those. But to me, for me, today, the only true prayer is a prayer of gratitude. Because when I step back, I realize that I've got everything I need. You know? I think I mentioned it here before in the last few weeks. I mentioned it often in my talks and in meetings. You know, talk about different faiths that relate to the program. How about the Wizard of Oz, you know? Dorothy had the ruby slippers on ever since she landed, you know? But she had to follow the whole yellow brick road all the way through, you know, dealing with the Wicked Witch, dealing with the monkeys, dealing with the poppy field, dealing with all that stuff. And she had it all the time. And I know that I have it here. I pray for the willingness to see that and what it is. Again, we were talking here not too long ago. What's the message in that? You know, hard times. There's always a lesson. There's always a lesson for me. I believe that today. Sometimes it's easier to say it than to truly, you know, demonstrate that. But I know in the end that the end is assured. You know, I've got everything I've ever needed. So, from the prayer point of view. All right, meditation, you know. In the big book, when I talk, we conclude this period of meditation, and pretty much that is the reflection and all that stuff. But again, Sidney J. Harris, things I've learned en route to looking up other things. I've heard it said in the program very simply, you know, prayer is asking God and meditation is listening for his response. And that's not so far off the mark, I don't think. But I don't know where it came from, but a conditioning in my mind that meditation The goal of meditation was to become a good meditator. And that's not the goal of meditation at all for me. What I strive for in my meditation is I try to clear my mind, you know. I try and stop that constant conversation that I'm having with myself in my head. It's like a waterfall. I mean, that is very hard to do. I mentioned last week when I went over, you know, that, you know, they say in the program in so many places, you know, we're supposed to stay in the present moment. And one of the easiest way to get an alcoholic out of the present moment is to have a meeting go over a few minutes. So that's why I said I'm going to try and not go over tonight. But another thing that I try and do with my meditation is return to the present moment. And sometimes it's it can be a mental thing. It can be a physical thing. You know, I literally look down at my feet and I'm right here, you know. I'm not worrying about what that person's doing down the block. I'm not thinking about what's going to happen if this happens. I'm not worrying about something that happened two days or 2 years ago. Again, a lot of these things easier said than done. Another reason that I try and meditate is, and as a result of these other things, is an awareness of what's going on, you know. An awareness of what my station in life is, generally speaking, an awareness of some very specific things in my life, an awareness of the present moment, you know, and that leads to mindfulness. So, how do I start meditating? Well, there's two different kinds for me. One is informal, very informal meditation, you know. Sometimes it's just a matter of paying attention to what I'm doing. You know, I read, I don't know if any of you ever heard of Carlos Castaneda or any of his books. And Don Juan was talking to Carlos Castaneda about this intent and all these things. And he says, you know, it's like when you tie your shoes. He says, you tie your shoes in the best possible way that you can tie your shoes. You're mindful about it. You don't just like slob, you know, like. You'd have to read maybe that part of the book. But it was excellence versus perfection. Is the lesson that I'm trying to learn. Whether, you know, whether I'm contemplating a night sky, whether I'm walking, whether I'm drinking tea. I had a pot of tea a couple weeks ago, and I love tea, but I'm taking my last sip, and I realized I didn't smell it. I didn't taste it. You know, it's like I'm just slamming it down to get a caffeine jolt. So, again, it's fleeting, that mindfulness and that awareness. So like I said, walking, drinking tea, contemplating a night sky, looking over out at the lake. I'm a woodworker, whether I'm doing woodworking. And sometimes I can go into almost like a trance doing these kind of things. talk about awareness and mindfulness. Just the other day, I was working in my wood shop. A few years back, I had a big wild cherry tree. I cut it down. I had it milled, kiln dried, and I've made a beautiful desk for my wife. I made a tea serving tray. And I had enough stock left over to make like a butcher block countertop for a pass-through in our kitchen and things, from our kitchen to our dining room. And Saturday, the day before we turned the clocks, we went over to friends of ours. He's got a planer, which smooths them and gets them parallel. I don't have one. You know, they cost too much money. So come on over and do it at my house. Well, we had dinner with him. We started working on this in his garage, and it took way longer than I thought it would. You know, it was 11:30, almost midnight. Way after midnight, we got home, and now we have to turn the clocks back. You know, so I didn't get much sleep, and when I get to sleep late, I don't sleep well anyway, and I'm up early, and I'm just, you know, in a half a fog, and I'm sitting there the next day, and I should do something, you know, like my sponsor says, you're a human doing instead of a human being. Should do something. I'll go down there, and there's a couple of those pieces that need to be cleaned up. I gotta square the ends on them on my chop saw. So, done this 1,000 times. I got the pieces. I laid them out, and it might be bad practice, but I had a couple extra pieces on the table, and I set the first one in, and I'm bringing the saw through, and I am not there. I am not aware. I'm not mindful. And one of those spare pieces, like I said, I'm always careful to keep them out of the way. Well, the blade caught it. And that thing took that piece and threw that into the saw. It destroyed the fence. It seized the blade. 2.5 horsepower motor. It snapped my finger. I was lucky I didn't break it or lose it or worse, you know. So I was sloppy. And what came to mind was halt, you know. Everything in its time. It just wasn't the right thing to be doing. So I am not mindful and aware and contemplative all the time. I make a lot of mistakes. Another thing in informal meditation is, and I mentioned this before, is I try and notice what my opinions are. You know, I said I'm here in this series of talks to share my experience, strength, and hope, not my opinions and my advice and my fears. So noticing my opinions when I don't have time for formal meditation can be very helpful for me, because it can take me back to that reality that, hey, you're one of those guys on the elephant again, and you're not paying any attention to this guy over here. So, again, that sloppy woodworking, that halt, back to basics. And for me, that's back to the breath. You know, like I said, I can look at my feet, but back to the breath. I just take it. When it happened, and I did, I took a deep breath. I went, and I stopped, you know, and just that act in itself, sometimes it's so powerful. And I can continue with that and take it deeper if I want, you know. So back to the breath. I can also, oftentimes start a formal meditation process with that too. Coming back to the breath and exhaling the breath. There are different types, so many different types of meditation today. Look it up. You know, these are the things that I stumbled upon in my path that I've incorporated. I've heard of others, and I've tried some others. The first one, it's called metta meditation, and basically it's a repetition of phrases. And I start with myself, and that's what they recommend in the practice, that you start with yourself, and then some other person that's not necessarily close to you, and then maybe some other group, and you expand that out literally into the whole world. And it's, may I be free from danger. May I have physical happiness. May I have mental happiness. May I have ease of well-being. May you be free from danger. And that just goes out, you know. another type of meditation that I do, came across and that I do very often, and this is more spontaneous, even though it's not necessarily a formal kind of thing, it's called Tonglen. And it reminds me, you see that movie, The Green Mile? Was it Tom Hanks was one of the guards, and he had that urinary tract infection or something? And the big guy that, you know, the black guy they were going to execute, when he came up and he cured him, you know, and he like sucked in all that disease and he blew it out in that green cloud that looked like a nasty swarm of locusts. It's kind of what Tonglen is. When I see someone suffering, you know, I breathe in that suffering and I exhale some healing, you know. Whether it be a child that fell off his bike, or that woman on the pregnant woman on the stretcher that you saw in the picture in Ukraine that lost her life and her baby, you know. I breathe in that pain because sometimes that's all I can do, you know. And I breathe out some healing because I truly believe that, you know, there's things in this world that we don't understand, that I can't understand, that are unknowable, but I think that there's positive and negative energy, and I've been around people that are put out some negative energy, you know, like at work we got a sign in the office that says, everybody brings joy to this office, some when they come in and some when they leave, you know, so... Another form of formal meditation that I do is called Maranasati meditation, and it's death meditation. And some people say that's pretty morose and pretty, you know. And I contemplate my mortality, you know. In the Christian faith, we do it, but it's and there's a regular process for that. There's 10 or 12 things that you focus on and contemplate on, you know. With the purpose of being fully alive, you know, it's not morose and it's not morbid, you know. We all know we're going to die, we just don't think it's ever going to happen, you know, or me sometimes, the way I act, you know. But when I do that, you know, and I get too big for my britches, and I do that type of meditation, that death meditation, it's so that I may be fully alive. And realize that everything given to me is a gift, you know, even if it sucks. So, you know, some people They'll light candles or incense or smudge sticks. They'll chant mantras. I never do that. You know, I always had this image of to meditate. I had to sit there, you know, in a full lotus position. And, you know, if you put me in a full lotus position, no disrespect to anybody that this happened to, but it'd be, to me, akin to stuffing me in one of those sweat boxes that the Japanese did to the prisoners of war in the Pacific. You know, I ain't going to fit in the first place, and if you do get me in that position, you ain't going to get me out of it. So, I can sit standing up. I can sit comfortably. A lot of times, I fall asleep, and that's okay too. But so, a mantra, it's not really a mantra that I chant. It's more of a phrase that I say occasionally. And I've said, I think it was just last week maybe I mentioned. And for me, it's only here, only now. When I sense that things are starting to get out of hand, you know, no matter where it is, only here, only now. Because that's all I have. I've been thinking of getting a t-shirt made like that. Anyway, so there's no right or wrong way to meditate. And I mentioned that's what some people do. Some people, you know, they ring bells or chimes. And this is a singing bowl. Some of you may know what it is. What's that? It's one way. Thich Nhat Hanh, a Vietnamese Buddhist monk. I've heard him when this would ring. He'd say, "May the sound of the bell penetrate deep into the cosmos so that all living beings can hear its song." And I'm paraphrasing that. It's called a singing bowl. You can hit it like that. And if I can do this. Come on. My aunt, you say whatever floats your boat. So that may not work for you, but there's energy there. I will say that. This is my wife's singing bowl, and I want to thank her because I asked her earlier today if she would mind if I brought this to the meeting, and I explained what I was doing. Special effects. And she said, if you're doing sound effects, why don't you take a whoopee cushion so that people can hear what it sounds like when you fart while you're meditating? So, with that, I'm done for the night. Thank you. That does take me to Rule 62, though. And if any of you know what that is, it's don't take yourself too damn seriously.
Thanks, Ed. Yeah, that's a sign that you're getting really relaxed while you meditate.
Yeah.
Who would like to ask a question of our speaker? If you're here in the audience, go ahead and raise your hand. We'll get you the microphone. Or if you're on Zoom, feel free to go ahead and speak up. Although technically, if you raised your hand, we'd be able to see it now with our TV here. So who'd like to get us started?
I will.
All right.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Rick.
Hi, Rick.
I'd like to thank you for your time with spending it with us and educating us. For me, myself, I'm trying to keep it simple. And there was a lot of good things that I heard in the beginning that I could relate to, and I held it in and I closed my eyes and took it in. But then when you got to this other meditation from different nations and stuff, it lost me. I mean, I'm willing to try it, but I'm not there yet. That's me, myself, and I. I try to give it up to God, and I practice my meditation out in the nature and stuff is how I developed that. I didn't even know what meditation was when I first came into these rooms, and it was hard. But I was looking for an answer after I prayed and being silent and trying to silence my mind. And that was very, very hard for me, and it still can be today. So I'm a work in progress, and that's okay, but I'm trying to see where God is leading me. No matter what practice you use, I believe, can work in everyone's life. And I appreciate your options and your technique and what works for you. So I think each one of us has to search that ability that works for us. And this has been very educational, I must say. Thank you for that. I watch a lot of History Channel, so I knew a little bit about the honing and stuff like that, the bells and the rituals and stuff. But anyway, I guess I really don't have a question other than no way is the wrong way, right?
Right. Yeah, no way is the wrong way. And it wasn't my intention to make you believe that I do all those practices,
right,
or whatever. Yeah. It was that, you know, who am I to say that my ways are the right way, you know? So,
well, right now,
we're the only way.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I want to thank you for being here and giving us some options and some educational way of the 11th step, and thank you.
Thanks, Rick. Good seeing you.
Oh, there we go.
Hi, I'm Leslie, alcoholic, and first, thank you so much, because there was a lot of information there, and what it brought to my own mind was, I think in the big book where Bill tells us to be quick to see where religious people are right, and to shop and pick and choose, and so, you know, my question was going to be, which one of those things do you actually do, of this whole variety of meditation styles, mm-hmm, you know, contemplating mortality, or what I can't even remember the name of, breathing in the suffering and, mm-hmm, breathing it out, which feels like eating someone else's pain to me, but if it works for someone, mm-hmm, else. But anyway, which of those things do you do as part of your meditation practice?
Yeah, she's asking on Zoom, if you didn't hear, which of those things that I mentioned do I do in my practices? And thank you for that, because that was the one thing that I missed. I wanted to bring that up. You know, on page 87, if we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to it. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers, meditations, which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. So the practices that I do, I as far as the meditation end of it goes, that call to prayer again was just it was for me to share, because it was enlightening for me I stumble on my path. It's hard for me to continuously ask, you know, and be in that, you know, spiritual place. As far as the meditative process goes, I pretty much do all those, you know. I do walking meditation. I don't do it every time I walk, but I do walking meditation. I focus on it. I nature, you know. Like I said, at the lake, the lake, you know, it's just... Yesterday, foggy day. At our house, the fog didn't lift till 3 o'clock. It was cold and damp. And today... I went outside this morning, and my first reaction was, oh, what a beautiful day, you know. But yesterday was a beautiful day too. And that likens me to, and I'm trying to answer your question. You ever been in an airplane, you know, when in the wintertime, when you go somewhere on vacation and it's gray, that November kind of weather, and rainy, and you get above the clouds and a bright blue sky and sunshine? Well, you know, that's always there, you know. And the stars are always there in that blue sky. It's always there. So I try to do that informally. I'm really working on trying to focus on what my opinions are, because it's not always what reality is. And it can get me in conflict with other people. And again, the metta, you know, may I be free from danger, you know, and extend that to the world. The Tonglen, breathing in other people's pain and suffering and breathing out healing, you know, so that I might be of some usefulness. When there's nothing else that I can do, the serenity prayers is change the things I can and accept the things I can't. The death meditation I do, and again with the intention of living a fuller life. So
understood. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Ed. We appreciate it.